It truly is a fascinating time to be a startup.
Growing up in New Jersey, living in New Jersey, you just get to understand more types of people.
I just need to get my backpack off my back.
Passage to Profit, Road to Entrepreneurship. You just heard some snippets from our show. It was a really great one, so stay tuned.
Want to patent your invention? The chance is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I am Kenya Gibson filling in for Richard Gearhart.
I'm Elizabeth Gearhart. I do marketing for Gearhart Law and I have my own startups. We have an incredible guest, Denise Lambertson. She is an influencer marketing expert and she has a fund, an investment fund, and she is just a wealth of knowledge.
And we also have Mike Hamm, who is the host of Greetings from the Garden State podcast. And Mike is putting the Garden State on the map. And we're also joined by Mark Dingle, who, if you wear a backpack, you don't want to miss his very innovative accessory.
Kenya and I both keep up with the marketing trends. They move pretty quickly. And one of the trends we want to talk about is ChatGPT.
Can you tell us what that is exactly?
ChatGPT is an artificial intelligence program. It helps people create content. It does other things too, like a lot of other things. But a lot of the ways people use it for marketing is to create content. And I played around with it a little bit. It's really fun, actually.
And I heard it helps people like find information about things too. It's kind of like a little personal assistant, if I understand that correctly.
It is. So you go onto the website, which is open.ai or something like that. I can't remember exactly the name of it now. And you get your own account and you can ask questions and get answers. I watched a webinar on it sponsored by Meetup. You can put in what is intellectual property and it'll go scour all the data that was fed into it. So they fed a whole bunch of data into this program up to 2021. So if you asked, what's the latest intellectual property case in, say, the Southern District of New York or something, it wouldn't have that because it would only have up to 2021. But for evergreen data or regular stuff, it's really good. So you could say what's intellectual property and it would give you a description of what intellectual property is.
And like anything that's new, it's like they haven't worked out all the kinks. So I wouldn't bet my house on the information that it's providing, but it's a good, definitely a good source. Like if you're in a pinch and you need something quickly or you're trying to save on time in terms of research.
Have you played with it yet, Kenya?
I haven't.
When I went in and played with it, Kenya's exactly right. A lot of the stuff in there is wrong. So I put Richard Gearhart, Summit, New Jersey, attorney, and it got him. Like perfect. It gave me all the stuff about Richard that was absolutely right. I tried putting myself in and it thought I was an attorney, which I'm not. And then I tried putting in more refined data to see if it could find me and it really couldn't.
It all depends.
What I find interesting is what are people going to be putting online now in their various descriptions and things in the hopes that it makes it into the next data dump for ChatGPT?
Right? I'm going to put in there that I'm a billionaire and hope that it picks that up and that comes into fruition.
I think I'm going to do that too. But what I thought was really cool about it is if you do any data analysis in Excel, you can ask it to write you an Excel formula for what you want to do based on your spreadsheet, and it will give you the formula and you can put it in your spreadsheet. It'll do the calculation.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because I never want to, you know, hassle with trying to look up the formulas for Excel. And then you can say, give me a week's worth of meals, two of them vegan or vegan, you know, two of them with fish, and it'll give you a meal plan. And then say, give me the recipes. It'll give you the recipes.
That's awesome. So it's kind of like a way to strengthen your weaknesses if, like, you're not well-versed in an area.
It is, but, you know, it's garbage in, garbage out. You really have to tell it exactly what you want it to find and what you want to do and be as specific as possible to really get a good answer.
Sounds helpful.
I used it for a blog post.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I am not an attorney, but I put in there, why do I need a trademark search? And what it came back with, of course, I had to run it by the attorney since I'm not an attorney, was actually very coherent and very comprehensive and really good because it went out and it found all these websites and pulled together the best answers. So I think a lot of people in marketing will use it for blog posts if you know what you're looking for. And then, of course, you always have to look at it and edit it because, like you said, stuff can be wrong. But it's fun and it really makes things go a lot quicker.
Yeah, I didn't know it would write stuff for you. So is that stuff transferable? Like you can just kind of, can you copy and paste and just?
You can't print it or download it or anything. It stays in your account for a while and you have to literally, like you said, highlight it, copy it, and then paste it into a Word doc. But it's fun. So now we want to find out what our guests think. Mark, what's your opinion?
I definitely feel like I need to learn more and understand it better. I definitely see how it could be useful for different startups I'm working with. For example, for the Venipak backpack accessory, for writing blogs, I've been thinking, you know, it's a lot of time and a lot of work to create a blog. So if I wanted to write a blog maybe on, like, you know, what is the best backpack to use for biking or, you know, something like that, I'd like to create that. I just think there's a lot of, you know, opportunity to use it to leverage, to create content more quickly.
And what do you think, Mike?
Personally, I love ChatGPT. I use it also for blog posts, social copy, all that kind of stuff. Because, like, when I run my show, I am a one-man show. So I schedule the guests, I record the episodes, I edit all my episodes, I do all my social stuff, write my blogs, run my website. And to take some of that bulk work off of my plate is amazing. And obviously, like you said, you have to go back through and make sure that some of it's correct or grammatically correct and all that kind of stuff. But it's just incredible. Like, you can be so specific with it and really dial in exactly what you want it to say. Like, write a blog post that's 5 paragraphs long that is SEO rich for these types of things. And that just helps all the stuff that you're doing. So if you're running a website and you need clickable content or stuff that's going to show up in a Google search, it's perfect for stuff that I do.
Sounds like you have it down. So
yeah.
My fear is that if I don't use it, I'm going to get left behind because so many people are starting to use it. I said, I think on the last week that we did this, that I signed up for this webinar about ChatGPT on Meetup. And when I signed up, like a week before, there were 5,000 signed up. By the time the webinar went online, there were almost 18,000 people there.
Yeah.
So Denise, what do you think about ChatGPT?
Well, I tend to agree with Mike. I use it a lot, and especially right now in connection with the marketing agency that I run. But the expertise that I have is really around startups, marketing, and investment, and future-proofing. Every startup will be able to optimize their business, run more efficiently. It's going to become like the competitive edge to beat is how literate you are in AI in general, but certainly ChatGPT first. So whether that's trying to identify trends, looking at competitors, looking at where your customers are, looking at where your hopeful customers are, you know, making decisions around distribution, all of that will be fueled by ChatGPT or something similar.
Right, because I heard there are competitors coming online.
Oh, yeah. Google has one and Microsoft and then, you know, a whole host of other AI. It's all happening.
Wow, what a world we live in. With that, now it is time for Kenya and myself to interview Denise Lambertson. I am so excited to have Denise on this show. She's an influencer marketing expert. She has an investment fund, Constellation Capital, and she helps startups and she marries the two. I am so excited to have Denise here. I want to hear all about what the greatest and latest is. So welcome, Denise. What's going on? What's new in the world of influencer marketing and capital funds?
That's a big question. You know, it's an incredible time to be a startup, which is really what I specialize in, is influencer marketing for startups and investing in the kinds of startups that we also understand could use the help and support of influencer marketing. So consumer brands, really. And it truly is a fascinating time to be a startup. One, because of things like AI, which we were just talking about before, and how much that is changing. Two, because of the amount of excitement and disruption there is now in the social media platforms with the changes to digital ads and the introduction of platforms like TikTok, et cetera. The volume of content that you need to put out as a new business is pretty incredible. And that can be for your business and for the founder and for the individual employees, which also a lot of times, if they're young, are influencers. So it all kind of circles together.
That's awesome. And can you just break down influencer marketing for us? Because I feel like it's a term that kind of gets thrown around a lot of times and people don't know necessarily what it is, especially how it's applicable to brands.
Absolutely. Kenya, you know, it's a term that suffers from nobody actually putting a flag in the ground and saying this is actually what it is. So some people think of influencer as a halo term that includes traditional celebrities and athletes and creators and anyone with a social media account that's putting out content. That's one way to think of it. Influencer marketing as a capital ecosystem is really about individuals that have a social reach on one of the platforms and that are selling that reach via content to brands and compelling some sort of action, whether that's a sale or a sign up or a download. That's the way that my agency defines influencer marketing. And we put celebrity, athlete, ambassador, all of that to the side and give it its own category. But as I mentioned, it's hard because it does mean something different to almost everyone. So starting off with defining it is a great way to begin a conversation.
And when you take a look at like the buying cycle, when how consumers make decisions, what phase of the buying cycle would you say that is best suitable for an influencer marketing tactic?
That's a good one. And this is going to be a slightly unsatisfying answer, but it really depends on the product and, you know, the company. So in some cases, you know, it makes a lot of sense to put influencer marketing into the customer journey, like at the validation point, consumers trying to decide, is this supplement really, you know, going to do what it says it's going to do? Oh, this influencer that I like and trust, great. You know, I'm going to check them out. They like it. Let me think about it a little bit more. Oh, now I'm getting retargeted. Bam. Okay, now I'm going to buy, right? So in some cases, it's the very bottom of that customer journey, at the bottom of that funnel. It's like, okay, well, they've been thinking about it, looking at it, seen it online, and then, hey, it's an influencer they really like. That's like, I've been trying this, I've been using it, and that's the person that will get them to take action. So it's highly dependent on the category and the brand and how much education it needs and how much validation it needs.
Richard has a story he loves. It's too bad he's not here, but Gearhart Law had a client, and years ago, this man paid Kim Kardashian for a tweet, and it was thousands of dollars for a tweet about his lighted case for a cell phone, and it just took off like wildfire. I mean, he had so many sales from that one tweet by Kim Kardashian.
Oh, that was a special moment in time when one tweet was a whole marketing strategy. That is no longer, unfortunately, but it absolutely was. There was that moment in time, and now that has changed dramatically. You still need to have a fully baked marketing strategy, a ton of other content, a ton of SEO, blog, all of the things, email marketing, very important. But my philosophy, both for influencer marketing and for investing, is that, consumers trust people more than they trust companies. And so when you insert a personal narrative into a company's conversation with consumers, you're kind of building this bridge of trust. And Kim Kardashian was one of the first that really had an audience and was willing to talk about things. And what's more perfect for her to talk about than a lighted phone case, since she lives on her phone?
Right. I think that brings up another point. You have to match the influencer to your product, right?
Yes. And that's what you do. You help clients do.
That's right. We spend a lot of time talking to our clients about their current customer and their target customer. Sometimes the client, it's better for them to go deeper with the customer they already have. And in other times, they're trying to, attract the next concentric circle out of customers. So we start with that, just kind of like, what are you trying to accomplish here? And then we have a conversation about brand building versus sales converting, because an influencer can typically do one of those two things really well, but not both. And if you can find one that can be both, that's fantastic. And there are certainly those out there. But we think about the answer to that question. If somebody is trying to really build brand awareness, then we're looking for influencers that look exactly like that target customer. Versus if a company is really focused on generating sales with influencers, then we care less about how the influencer looks and more about, do they have the audience and can they connect with that audience and compel that sale? Our process is quite strategic. I believe that there is a feeling in the business community that, I'm just going to DM a few influencers and send them my product. And that is a strategy. And actually, that's a little bit like a moving target. I believe that influencer marketing is so substantiated now as a marketing channel that it really deserves the same kind of care and attention that you would give any other part of your marketing strategy.
Do the influencers actually use the product before they talk about it?
When we work with them, they do. that's pretty important, right? I believe that we all know when we're being sold to, and we all know when, there's somebody representing a product and they aren't using it. It's a very kind of, supermodel era type of marketing experience. So most companies, and certainly our agency now, will make sure that the influencer has tried the product, used it, and typically we'll do some education sessions with them too. Do you understand enough about the business? Can you answer questions? If you get comments from your followers, are you able to answer them articulately? How can we support you in better getting to know this? So not only do they have to like it, but they have to be responsible, ambassadors to it as well.
At what phase does a brand or a business start to incorporate influencer influencer marketing?
We really recommend from day one. And in some cases, we'll even launch influencer marketing pre-launch for companies. What we advocate is a different kind of influencer marketing for different stages of your business, right? So in the pre-launch, in the early stage, you might be trying to generate enough content for it to, you know, have some testimonials so that you're hitting that validation again when people go to search. But you may not have the budgets yet to implement a full across all platforms strategic, and you might not have the infrastructure to support it yet either. Do you have the distribution, right? So after a certain point, we do a lot with consumer packaged goods, so, you know, healthy products. You're moving into retail. Well, that's a new strategy, right? What's the kind of influencer that can drive somebody into, you know, a Whole Foods, et cetera? So it's really about pairing the right strategy with the right point in your life cycle. But in my opinion, it should be done from day one.
I would if I could. How much does it cost? Like, how much does it cost to get an influencer, really?
Multiple answers. There are tiers of influencers, and this is all new vocabulary in the marketing world, but, you know, nano influencers are influencers that have a smaller following, maybe 5,000 followers and under. And one engagement with them, one activation with them could cost, you know, $50 to $100, depending on the platform. You know, then you've got micro influencers, then you've got macro influencers, then you've got super influencers, and then you're into celebrities, right? And so depending on how many activations you're putting them to work in and what kind, is it video, what channel you're on, the variables that enter into that calculation are numerous. So it's very hard to give an exact number. But what I can say is the cost is going up and has been going up. It's gotten much more expensive to engage influencers over the last few years.
In terms of like the algorithm and all the things changing and the social media landscape, what's your take on Reels? Mm-hmm. And is that like a definite part of somebody's recommended strategy when you're working with a client?
I believe that it's a really important feature that Instagram rolled out, and I feel like it was a little bit too late, but I think they're doing a great job. It is now a favored feature in Instagram, so we are absolutely requiring all of our clients to participate in it, and we look for what we call source influencers for our clients that are very adept at creating Reels. But really, kind of the headline on that is video. Video is incredibly important. And regardless if that's YouTube Shorts, which is on the spike up as far as growing channels, Reels, TikTok, et cetera, video is absolutely the way to go. And most influencers that are professionalizing their services will encourage you to engage them for that.
Video, it's good to have other people that will do videos for you because video is tough. When we get to my little segment, you'll see I'm doing a new business based on video. And what I'm realizing, I've had very good people try to shoot like the 30-second videos of themselves. And it's hard because you don't always look at the camera and people look all over the place. And one person shot his 30-second pitch for me, very experienced, very smart man. And he said, okay, here it is after the 238th try. So yes, people need to use video and celebrities are used to it. But how do you get your clients comfortable with it?
To be totally honest, I don't even like doing video. You know, it is, but there is a generation coming up behind me that it was born with an iPhone in their hand practically and feels very, very comfortable and documents their whole entire life over video. And then there are folks that just have a knack, a DNA tweak that just make them really great at it. For the rest of us mere mortals, it does take a lot of practice to get comfortable. And, you know, a big part of marketing in general for startups that I'm encouraging the majority of our portfolio companies and our clients to do is engage in founder marketing, which is another kind of influencer marketing where the founder of the company is also putting all of these sorts of tools into place. And that's where I get the most pushback. Everyone seems to see the value in it, but it's like getting founders to do it. It's like, oh, they don't want to.
Yeah.
And I get it.
It's a lot of work. Social media is a lot of work.
Yes,
it takes like 100 pictures or a video just to be like, oh, I got that one good take. And you're like, oh, it's laboring.
It absolutely is. And that's why I also believe that the cost of engaging influencers is going up because, you know, that is time and that's a service and that time has value. And so frustrating as it is for our clients and for, you know, companies that are used to the rates of when the channel first kind of became big, it does make sense because it does take a lot of time.
Passage to Profit with Kenya Gibson sitting in for Richard Gearhart. I'm Elizabeth Gearhart. We've been talking to our guest, Denise Lambertson, and we have more of Denise and then two incredible products, services you want to hear about after Denise. So we will be right back.
What are entrepreneurs' most valuable assets? Their passion and ideas. We can't protect your passion, but we can protect your ideas. Trust Gearhart Law to protect your ideas with premier patent, trademark, and copyright services. There's never been a better time to start your own business. Contact us at GearHartLaw.com. At Gearhart Law, we have years of experience protecting entrepreneurs' ideas and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at Gearhart Law, www.gearhartlaw.com. Don't let the wrong protection strategy ruin your business. All of our attorneys are passionate about protection and are licensed and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Contact Gearhart Law on the web at GearHartLaw.com. Together, we can change the world. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I am Kenya Gibson, sitting in for Richard Gearhart with my lovely co-host today, Elizabeth, who's doing a phenomenal job in studio with Denise Lambrinson. So Denise is an influencer marketing expert. She's also the founder of LMS, and she also is a managing partner at Constellation Capital. Did I get all that right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk about the investment side of what you do for your expertise.
Launching Constellation Capital and becoming an investor was an incredible evolution to my career that I never quite saw coming, but I'm truly thrilled to have done. And really, it's built off of the same premise as the marketing agency, which is really around the idea that strategic capital, celebrity, influencer, et cetera, that is incredibly valuable in consumer products these days. And so Constellation Capital, the investors in the fund, the limited partners, the LPs, are celebrities, athletes, and influencers. And they have a desire to be in a fund and be investors because they like the idea of being on the cutting edge of new brands and new products and disruptive categories, and are looking for ways that they can provide what I call passive value or passive marketing value without having to do like a whole endorsement deal or something along those lines. So that is an incredible, as I mentioned, evolution in my career. I am not a trained venture capitalist, but having worked with startups through the marketing agency for so long and seeing the ability for celebrities, influencers, and athletes to really accelerate growth and be a part of that story kind of gave me permission to enter into this new realm.
That's great. And what would you say it's like a good time for a business or a startup or a product to start seeking funds?
Well, we're at a fascinating point of inflection because things have changed dramatically in the last 18 months. We're coming out of a time when during COVID in particular, and even in the years leading up to it, the amount of capital that was available to startups was just excessive. And so what we were seeing were, you know, a lot of businesses fundraising off of what I call the jockey with no horse pre-launch, you know, like the idea without having an actual product yet. And that was working. Now, with the capital markets changing, venture capital has dried up significantly. And so for the venture capital world and consumer products, there is real emphasis on some tried and true metrics, sales, distribution, even if you don't have sales yet, POs, if it's a retail play, marketing cost being at a certain place. So the right time in this moment in time is almost thinking about it like tech. Like you've had a beta and you've proven out a little bit. It doesn't have to be massive numbers, but you can show, hey, we have something here. We've sold X amount of products with X amount of marketing dollars with this kind of team. We've got a PO. Now we need capital in so we can fund the PO and we can bring the marketing to the next level.
Do you ever deal with people who are going on QVC or Shark Tank? And does that help them get capital if they have a big QVC run coming up or something?
Certainly Shark Tank. We've invested in a bunch of brands that have participated in Shark Tank, and we work at the agency with a bunch of brands that have participated in Shark Tank. And Shark Tank has become, it's so fun to watch and to have that be a theatrical experience, the investment side. And it really is an incredible marketing channel in and of itself. Regardless of whether or not the business gets funding or takes the deal that the sharks offer, and a lot of companies will see a huge bump in sales just based off of the awareness alone.
It's good you say that because we've had a few shark tankers on our show. And as a matter of fact, the few people that appeared on this show led to them getting on Shark Tank. So I feel like these channels are great. Like the more people can see you, hear you, and know that you exist, you never know where it's going to lead down the road.
Well, Kenya has her success story with Kevin Lane and Create a Castle.
Yeah, so Kevin Lane and Create a Castle, I met him on the beach just sashaying around, like walking by with my husband. He was building sandcastles. And I'm like, that's so cool. Like, what are you doing? Wonderful product. Fast forward, we invited him to come on the show. He went on Shark Tank. He's now in, oh my God, how many stores now? I know he's in BJ's Wholesale. He's in Walmart. He's like exploded since coming on Passage to Profit. So I say all that to say, you never know who you're going to meet on the beach, and you never know where Passage to Profit is going to take you.
And he was on QVC, and a big box store saw him on QVC, which he met the person who helped him get on QVC through the show.
So Kenya, that's what's called a gateway influencer. You are the influencer that influenced him building his business.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
It feels good to be the gateway because really I love to help people and see them succeed.
Kenya really is. And we are starting the sixth year of this show. We've been doing the show for 5 years almost now. And when we first started, after just a couple months, Kenya was like, to your point earlier, let's get short videos of everybody in front of the iHeart logo. And nobody was really doing that. So she is very creative and very much a gateway influencer. Yes.
We try to stay creative here. What does Earl Nightingale say? There's no competition. All you have to do is create.
I love that. Absolutely. The idea of competition can be very overwhelming. And if you're just documenting and creating, and that's enough to keep the engine of the business going for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. So when you're looking at a consumer product, I know you do the wellness and health space. What specifically do you look at before you will give anybody any of your money?
What we look for is, first, does your product deliver on whatever promise it's making? In this day and age, you just can't fake it. It'll be a flash in the pan, you know, a tweet from somebody or an Instagram post from someone big. Maybe we'll get that first order. But if there's not substance to that product, then you don't have a business. So first and foremost, the promise. Second, for Constellation Capital, because of the marketing expertise that the fund was founded on, we look a lot at marketing, branding, and positioning. If you have a name that I can't pronounce, if you have packaging that doesn't look good on video or photos, if you're not talking about your brand in the right way, if you don't know who your customer is or know who you want your customer to be, because we're strategic capital, I don't really feel like I can help you until you get that in order, right? We look a lot at founding teams. Do they have success as far as launching other companies? Have they been acquired? If not, who's on their board? Are they coachable? Are they willing to be mentored by those that they've surrounded as advisors? We look at what other investors are already in and at the table, because Constellation Capital is a boutique fund, so we don't set terms and leads. So we look a lot to our peers and who else is making those investment decisions. But for me, at the end of the day, it's gut instinct. You know, do I think that this is going to work in the market? Do I believe in it? That's my process. It's a little bit different than, again, like if you were talking to a banker or a, you know, three-time fund analyst, something like that. But I really feel that to divorce myself from those steps would do my investors a disservice, because that's how I understand business.
How many people should be on the team? What if you're just starting out and you don't have money to pay other people?
Oh, that's fine. I'm a big fan of the lean startup. I'm a big fan of bootstrapping and working with consultants, freelancers, vendors, low code and no code tools, ChatGPT, AI, anything like that. Anything that you can do to maximize your output and minimize your costs is definitely an attractive quality in a founder. So what I think is really important is the ability to actually get a product to market and get consumers that connect with it, and to be able to articulate your mission and the reason that you exist really well. Again, we're coming out of a period where there were so many products being pumped into the market based off of data and, oh, look what, you know, Amazon bestseller list, so let me make a copycat. And like, there was not a lot of substance behind many businesses that were being launched, because it was so easy to use digital ads to just acquire customers. And now that that bubble has burst to a certain extent, really, you know, looking at some of these business fundamentals. I really like founders that created product based off of an unmet need.
So celebrity investors, like any specific trends that they look for, that they're into from where they sit?
Celebrity by nature, really what they want to see is, if I get behind it, is it going to be doing something that's really different? Is it going to have a reason for being? Is it, you know, disruptive, to use a buzzword?
Denise Lambertson, influencer marketing expert, founder of LMS. This has been just so educational and fun. Where can people find you?
I have a little social media myself, at hold, the number four, Denise, hold for Denise, are my handles. And then my marketing agency is We rlms.com, and the fund is constellation.capital.
If you missed any of this, our podcast will be out tomorrow wherever you find your podcast. This has been a fascinating discussion, but don't go away because we have a couple of really cool things coming up, and we can hardly wait to have you hear them. So you're listening to Passage to Profit with Kenya Gibson sitting in for Richard Gearhart. I'm Elizabeth Gearhart. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Lisa Askley, the Inventress, founder, CEO, and president of Inventing A to Z. I've been inventing products for over 38 years. Hundreds of products later and dozens of patents. I help people develop products and put them on the market from concept to fruition. I bring them to some of the top shopping networks in the world. QVC, HSN, eVine Live, and retail stores. Have you ever said to yourself, someone should invent that thing? Well, I say, why not make it you? If you want to know how to develop a product from concept to fruition the right way, contact me, Lisa Askeles, the Inventress. Go to inventingatoz.com, inventingatoz.com. Email me, lisa@inventingatoz.com. Treat yourself to a day chock full of networking, education, music, shopping, and fun. Go to my website, inventingatoz.com.
Passage to Profit continues with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
Kenya Gibson filling in for Richard Gearhart. I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, and we have just heard from our amazing guest. Such good content. If you missed it, you can hear it on our podcast tomorrow. But now we are going to go to Kenya's segment, which is Power Move. Who's our Power Move, Kenya?
So for Power Move today, I'm switching it up a little bit. I'm giving myself Power Move. I've been doing Power Move for the last 3 years. And I've decided to take all the stories that we've been telling about entrepreneurs and the pivot that they've made in turning it into a podcast. So Power Move is officially a podcast. So we're going to have an opportunity to talk to entrepreneurs longer, right, and tell more of their story. So I'm super excited to announce that. It's been something that I've been wanting to do for a very, very long time. But now is the time for the Power Move podcast. So Power Move Pod is the Power Move for today.
That is awesome. I'm sure it's going to be super successful. For those of you who don't know, Passage to Profit was Kenya's idea. She invited me into the city and we went to the Roxy because it was taping down in Tribeca back then. And we had a glass of champagne or two.
Or three or four.
And she pitched the concept of a show for entrepreneurs headed by a patent attorney. And what did he call me? His wingman is what he called me the other day. And I said, well, let me go talk to Richard. And I must have pitched it pretty well.
You did. Yes. You did.
Because he decided to go for it. That was almost 5 years ago, and everybody that we knew thought we were crazy. And some people were like, well, why would they ask you guys to be on? And we're like, well, I don't know. Go ask them. But again, Kenya's ahead of the curve. So now everybody has a podcast, and this is a radio show and a podcast. And what we've found is radio is a good medium because even though video is king and Richard is going on some local TV shows, it's scary to be on video. It's scary to be on TV. Not quite so scary to be on radio. So come to the radio.
Come to the radio.
So with that, I get a couple of minutes to talk about what I'm doing. So I started a podcast in December with Danielle Woolley for cats. It's called The Jersey Pod Cats. And we have people on and we talk about cats. And I started it because I had a cat that had a disease and could not figure out how to help him and was hoping to get input from the community. He was scratching his face really bad, all the fur off. In the end, after taking him to many vets, I finally said to the vet, you know, when I touch the bad parts on his face, it gives me a rash. Do you have an antihistamine? So I had to convince them to give me an antihistamine, which they did. And now he's fine. He's on a couple other things, too. So we still have the podcast, though, because I want to spread this far and wide. Like, don't give up because the cat was really bad at one point. But also use your own experience. Right. And then the other company that I have that I started is called Blue Streak Directory. It's a video directory for small businesses online featuring the business owners. To Denise's point, having people shoot short video themselves. And then I'm going to, instead of like the mumbo jumbo of video and everything out there, it's going to be in a very organized format. I'm having the website built right now. So it's going to hopefully replace Google when people are looking for B2B businesses to work with. You get to see the person and develop a little bit of trust before you call them. So if this looks like a person you wouldn't want to work with, don't call them. Go on to the next video. It gives you a lot more information about a business owner than just a picture and a write-up. So Blue Streak Directory, I've just recently, I'm really happy about this, made a couple of strategic relationships, I'll say, I'm not really sure I wouldn't want to call them partnerships, with people who will help with people getting their pitch down, people getting their video skills down. There's some great software now for people who want to make videos and look halfway decent on them. But as Denise will tell you, I'm sure the real key to a good video is to practice, practice, practice. So I'm really excited about this. I want to be responsible for the directory and have the other people do the side stuff. But I think bringing everybody together, it can be pretty powerful. So that's what I'm working on right now. That's the update there. Now, that's enough about me. Let's go on.
Mike Hamm is our first presenter. He is the host of Greetings from the Garden State podcast. It's all about people, diverse culture, amazing food, pristine beaches, rolling farmland, and the big cities of the state of New Jersey. Welcome to Passage to Profit.
It's so good to be here. It takes a lot for me to get out of New Jersey, especially coming into the city. But, you know, who could pass up this opportunity to come in here? So I'm excited to be here, even though we could have just done this back at home.
Well, we could have, but coming into the city has its own...
It's got its own thing.
You got to admit, I know you do yours alone from your studio, but you interview people too.
I don't do a studio.
You don't do a studio?
So I'm a road warrior.
You're a road warrior.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. We record every single episode we do on location. So if we're recording at a restaurant, we're in the restaurant. We did one in Stokes National Forest, like in the woods. We've done them on outdoors, busy diners, like all that kind of stuff. So we go all over the place to record our episodes, which makes it a lot of fun.
But it's only in New Jersey.
Only in New Jersey. It's really great.
I love that, though. You're like the tourism podcast, right? Like-
yeah. So, I mean, we've gone literally from as far north as you can get in Jersey, in Mahwah, Montague, to almost as far south as you can get in Wildwood. So we've literally covered almost the entire state. And the stuff that I've been able to experience, the people I've been able to meet, the places that I've gotten to go have been incredible. Full time, I'm an insurance salesman from New Jersey. So, like, I have friends now that I have no business being friends with, like Olympians and people that have been on The Voice or Top Chef or all these different kinds of places that now when I'm down in their little area, shoot them a text, be like, hey, what are you up to? Like, let's go for lunch. Let's grab a drink. And it's so much fun.
Yeah, that's one thing that kind of blows me away about New Jersey is like Whitney Houston lived a few towns over from us.
Yeah.
And there's so many famous people in New Jersey and it's just, you don't know it. I mean, it gets a bad rap. I grew up in Seattle. Yeah. I was like, oh man, I don't know if I could ever live in New Jersey, but I like it. I've been here, lived in New Jersey longer than anywhere I've lived in my adult life. And I enjoy it. But like you said, there's so much. It's like almost a continent with all the different parts of it, right?
Yeah, and it's all drivable. So you can do all of that stuff, like everything that you were just mentioning, you know, the beaches, the mountains, the cities like Newark or Jersey City or Hoboken or whatever, like all these places are, you could do it all in a day. If you really wanted to, you could do it all in a day. I probably wouldn't recommend it because it's a lot of things to do, but you can do all those things. But like you were just mentioning before with the people, like that's my favorite thing about Jersey and my favorite thing about doing the show is because not only is it the most densely populated state in the country, which I think is why it gets a bad rap. So like you're coming from Seattle, you're coming from even Pennsylvania, places like that. Like you're in a spot where all you see are The Sopranos, Jersey Shore, like other things that basically paint New Jersey in a specific light. But then you actually get here and you start interacting with the people and the places that you go. It's great. So densely populated state in the country, but also one of the most diverse populations in the country. So you get to interact with so many different kinds of people. And I think at the time of this recording, I think this week we released episode 78.
Oh, wow.
And we've been doing it since October 2021. Every single one of those stories is so unique. It's just a microcosm of what Jersey really is. And it just, you know, it keeps me going. It's like made me who I am growing up in New Jersey, living in New Jersey. Being from there, I think, has made me the person that I am today. Not that I would be any different if I came from another place, but you just get to understand more types of people.
So what made you start doing this in the first place?
My full-time job, I basically go out for lunch, I go out for drinks, I go to events. Obviously, COVID rolls around, you can't do that. So that's all stops in March 2020. So I started running virtual networking events. I started doing these little LinkedIn videos where I would interview people that would come to my events. And so I started the morning spotlight. So in the morning, we would spotlight someone on LinkedIn with like a 5-minute video Monday through Friday. So we did that I figured we would do it for 2 weeks. The curve would be flat. I would run out of content and everyone would go back to normal. Obviously, that did not happen. So I did that LinkedIn video series for 12 weeks. So we did 60 episodes in that time, which is, you know, you guys are in media, like, you know, that's a lot. And also it was very scripted. So it was basically like two people on a Zoom call reading to each other. So you can imagine it was electric, but it worked really well. And but then I wanted more of like my own personality in it. So I basically transitioned that into a more traditional long form 45-ish minute podcast Where I would just like ask more questions. And it started out very real estate focused, which is what my full-time job is. But then eventually I kind of got like burned out about talking about 1031 exchanges or commercial property taxes or whatever else you may talk about in that kind of space. So then I started having like other podcasters that I was meeting because I was on Clubhouse a lot and like would run a daily room there. So I got to meet a lot of cool people like that. Then musicians, professional athletes, like all these different people. I was like, this is really cool. And then fast forward from about July 2020 to August 2021, I was like home one day and I was kind of getting burned out with that show because I would do 2 episodes a week. So I did 140 long form episodes from July 2020 to April 2022 and just was like, this is getting to be too much, even though it was just on Zoom. So I just was like, what's something that I'm passionate about? Like the growth had kind of plateaued. It was never going to be a monetizable thing outside of getting clients for my actual business. And so I was like, why not do something that I'm passionate about? I've lived here for my entire life. I love it here. Like it's just, there's so many cool stories that you can get, like real folks, people that have blood, sweat, tears that they poured into this brewery that they opened, you know, down the street from me, which I am very thankful for because I do a lot of work there. But that kind of stuff to me is like the coolest part about doing it. So that's kind of how I got into podcasting and then eventually kind of how I launched this show.
That's awesome.
You know, I did a lot of interviews during COVID as well for the precursor to Blue Streak, which was Fireside, where I had long form interviews with business owners, small business owners. I got burned out, I have to say. I did over 100 of them and I have them still on a website and on a YouTube channel. But I got burned out and realized that I would either need help with that or and then I kind of reformulated to go to these short videos. But I loved it. I didn't get burned out on the people or talking to the people. I got burned out on Zoom.
Yeah, that was me big time. Like all those Zoom calls, like doing that, especially doing Zoom for work too. So you're basically on Zoom calls for hours and hours on end. And doing it the way that I do it now, I was like, whatever it is that I do, I want to do it in person because I could not do more Zoom calls. And I don't have a studio. I don't have access to a studio, nor do I have money to have access to a studio. So I was like, let's just go there. Like, why not just get a mobile little setup? So I literally show up with a cardboard box with all my Rode pod mics in there and like my little recorder and my camera. And I just show up, look like a homeless person. I'm like, hey, I'm here to record an episode. Like, I think they're expecting like a team of people to roll in. And it's just me.
You're like, where's the crew? Here's the box.
Yeah, I'm the crew. This is the box.
I love that.
I see Denise looking like, I got to talk to this guy.
Well, podcast hosts are another type of influencer to a certain extent, but one that it seems is still beholden to like an advertising model. How do you take your influence seriously? Like when a brand comes to you and you maybe need to forgive me, I don't know what it's called when you read the ad, right?
Yeah, like a sponsorship.
So, you know, is it important to you that you like it? Is it important to you that it aligns with your values, your ethics, the way that we would hope, a social media influencer? Yeah.
It is important for me to make sure that because my audience is on the smaller side when you think of these types of things that you're talking about, I have a very personal connection with close to probably 2,200 of those actual followers. Mm-hmm. So to be able to actually like build that trust like the way that I have for so long and then continue to actually like push out content that I know that they're going to be interested in, like to me, that's like the most important thing, because once that goes away, then it's over.
That's interesting. So what I'm thinking about in terms of scale, have you ever thought of maybe taking a national approach? Like I see all these very boring, let's go visit Vermont or something, right? Like from a tourism perspective, have you ever thought of using that as a model to invite people who are not from New Jersey to come visit New Jersey?
I do think that there is an opportunity too for people that live in other places, which is something that I'm like rolling around as a potential idea. Like I have spoken at a bunch of podcasting conferences in the last couple of years and talking to people about what I do with my show, they're like, oh, I would love to do that in Vegas. I would love to do that in Boston. I'd love to do that in Jacksonville. And to me, like that's an opportunity because I do think that people want to connect further with the communities that they actually live in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think like that was my mindset going in. And I do think that if you go to a place like that and you're like, okay, we're here in Boston and you could Manhattan, we're here. You could do an entire show and probably have more content to pull from than what I do in Jersey overall. So like to me, there's definitely an opportunity to almost like, I don't know if white label is the right term, but basically like take what I do, strip off Garden State, add in,
of course,
you know, Empire State, and then start doing it that way. Like the one thing that I have that's going for me, like I have an entire state to kind of pull from because it's an entirely drivable state. But if you're like in a city or a place where you have a lot of stuff, like you wouldn't do greetings from California and then drive from like San Jose to, you know, San Diego to LA to like wherever. So like to me, like that's kind of when I start thinking of how to further take what my business does outside of just the show and like some small time stuff that I do for clients. That's the one thing that I'm just trying to kind of flesh out and turn into a potential thing.
Yeah.
Because like, well,
wouldn't it be
places.
Cool to plan a visit somewhere and then now I have this podcast to go listen to so I can hear about all the things that I might be able to visit and do there, right? Like
yeah.
It just simplifies
right.
my planning yes. process.
Yeah. I have been like pestering multiple government agencies, particularly mm-hmm. New Jersey Tourism, because almost to your point, because I do think that there's an opportunity for people not only to learn what's happening in their communities, but like what you were saying, like to come to Jersey and be like, where do I even go? You know, and just be like, okay, here's Mike Ham's Greetings from the Garden State. It's indexed by town, let's say, and you want to go to Asbury Park and you can see all the places that I've interviewed in Asbury Park, what I think about them, all that kind of stuff. Like, I think that that's definitely something too.
So is there a favorite episode that you've cut so far or a favorite place that you've been able to visit?
So like I said, 78 episodes in. So that's like picking between a bunch of my kids. But I would say the coolest experience that I've had so far has been with the Seeing Eye in Morristown, New Jersey. So they're like the premier Seeing Eye dog training center in the country. And I live in Morristown and I always see them walking around. I'm like, how does a dog know when to cross the street? How does a dog know, you know, which way they're going? And all these different kinds of things. And then I reached out to them to do an episode on the show. They asked if I wanted to do a blindfolded walk with one of the dogs. And so I had my friend who's a videographer. He came out, mic'd us up, videoed the whole thing. We did an entire 30-minute walk. And like we were the head trainer and I were walking together and just doing an interview while being blindfolded and walking and then listening to that back, watching it back and kind of seeing where I was in space and time in Morristown was really cool. And like the stuff that they do for that community is off the charts. And like those are the types of stories that I just, there's so many more, obviously, but that's one that definitely stands out.
That's wild because I just heard them give a presentation at a woman's luncheon last week.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. They're, I guess
they have been playing
around
a lot of like clips from that episode at various functions. So maybe you even saw some of it.
I might have because
maybe.
They did show some video.
Yeah.
Video's king. Yeah. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in New Jersey and listen to the podcast and you'll find out.
Yes.
So where can people find you and what's the name of your podcast again?
So Greetings from the Garden State is the name of the podcast. It's a little long, but we committed to it. So we're rolling with it. And then greetingsfromthegardenstate.com is the website. So you can get literally everywhere. So social channels, listening platforms, everything will be on greetingsfromthegardenstate.com.
Passage to Profit, Road to Entrepreneurship.
So now we're moving on to our second presenter. We have Mr. Mark Dingle. He's the founder and the inventor of Ventipack, the original backpack spacer. Welcome to Passage to Profit. Tell us all about Ventipack.
Ventipack was created because I bike a lot in New York City, which some people think is great. Some people think it's insane, but I love it. It's almost so many reasons I love biking. It's the best place to get from A to B fastest, you know, wakes you up, gets you going. And you see a lot of the city. But I was biking to work, you know, from the Upper West Side down to lower Manhattan, sort of Union Square area. And I'd wear a backpack as I biked. And in the summer, biking along the Hudson River, which is a great way to start your day, biking along the Hudson River. The one thing that really was a drag was that my backpack would make my back so hot and sweaty. And after doing this day in and day out, just thinking it's really, this is insane. You know, I love biking, but the one thing that really is a drag is, you know, feeling my back hot and sweaty as I'm biking and then getting to work and just having this sweat drenched shirt, like a dress shirt. And so I realized I had to do something about it. And the idea was born there that I just need to get my backpack off my back and feel the breeze a bit.
That's good.
So what does it look like? Describe the product to us.
It's basically made of a soft neoprene over a sort of spring steel frame. So it's basically a very wide hold, hexagonal hold mesh that goes over a frame that's attached to a backpack. So it sort of comfortably rests on your back and it just keeps a separation of 1 or 2 inches so you can have real airflow through it.
Excellent. Denise, you are the consumer products guru here.
Yes, I hear unmet need. I hear a lot of that here. So outside of New York and major cities where biking is a form of commuting, are there other applications? Are there other consumers that could benefit from this?
Although I invented for biking, I was definitely thinking of also just the general pain of having sweat on a backpack, whether you're hiking or traveling or whatever you do with a backpack. So it's really broadly being used by hikers, bikers, by travelers. I loved it during COVID. One nurse said that it allowed her to wear her backpack all day because the also physical therapists and some doctors that I've talked to, they really like how it sort of distributes the weight and into your back better, into your thoracic area, which is the strongest part, and away from the traps and sort of the cervical top part of the back. And it sort of pulls your shoulders back. You can just read how people say it makes my backpack feel lighter. So there's that ergonomic aspect as well. But people are using it for all kinds of things, even Special Force Rangers, several of them who I shared it with, all said they use it on their assault backpacks, which I thought was really cool.
This sounds like a perfect product to have a patent on.
And I actually worked with Gearhart Law Firm to file a provisional patent, and they were great.
I love this product. I haven't bought one, but my daughter wants to hike the Appalachian Trail in a year. I read the book about the woman who hiked it on the Pacific Coast Trail, and I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, this would be so perfect if you're going to be hiking for months at a time.
You know, a lot of people have bought it before going on expeditions, which I love. I mean, I love exploring. I'm an explorer myself. So, yeah, we've gotten a lot of people. I ran into somebody in Western Connecticut a couple weeks ago as I was playing a game that my friends and I invented called American Forest Bocce. It's basically bocce in the woods, and it's a lot of fun. Goes with the Venipak lifestyle. We were in the Adirondacks during COVID. We just ended up throwing bocce balls in the woods. That maybe is another podcast one day. But we met a guy who's about to go hiking in the Himalayas, and he was excited to have one for his backpack. So also, we really like the idea of helping students. You look at students who are carrying heavy backpacks, and the co-founder of a very well-known and respected group of physical therapy practices here called Spear PT, and he said he really also liked the way it could help younger students, because as they're wearing heavy backpacks, it's actually causing a lot of issues to the spine. So I really want to kind of build out even more of that audience that will help improve the back ergonomics and not have back strain on the soft tissue development mm-hmm. while you're young.
That's smart. I was the kid that the book bag weighed more than me walking around, right?
It was awful. It's not good. It's not good. And then you see a lot of people one-shouldering, right? Also because I think the heat, you know, is a good reason to one-shoulder. But that's probably going to contribute to scoliosis, where your spine
curvature.
Is curved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. That part really excites me as well. And again, we haven't done any medical studies, but there's been a lot of good words said by people, physical therapists and others. It's in our Kickstarter video, for example, Venipak Kickstarter. And that idea of not just a great way to keep your back cooler, but actually helping people take care of their back is something that really drives me.
Since you're here with two really great marketing people, do you have a marketing question or challenge that you would want to ask Denise or Kenya?
The marketing is the most mysterious and hardest thing to figure out. So I definitely want to spend time. And the question, you know, I guess I would ask is, what I'm trying to do is find positive return marketing. So you find out something where you can spend X and make a good return on that marketing dollar in terms of your sales and gross profit. And I've tried, you know, Amazon, it's working. We sell our product on Amazon. So we know what the return on ad spend is on that. And, you know, on a good month in the summer, it might be 8 or something, which is quite good. You know, in the winter, it's a bit lower. But I'm really right at a point where I'm trying to, I call it cracking the code. So how can I find a way to spend money on advertising and make sure I'm getting a return?
I see, you know, a lot of people engaging with your product in the action phase of the buying cycle, right? So they're a biker, there's someone who's athletic, they're already in the market, and then they come across your product and they're like, wow, that's an awesome solve for like my sweaty back and all the things that I'm dealing with, right? So I think, you know, obviously lower funnel marketing is going to be super key, which is probably why you're seeing such a great result on Amazon, because Amazon knows what people are shopping for. Mm. So they're shopping for all these other things and then that are similar, and that like maybe they're buying hiking shoes or they're coming and then they see your product, right? And it pushes them up into the funnel. So I think like lower funnel marketing tactics would be super key. Like anything that you can do, SEO, anything that you can do to get your product in front of people who are already purchasing similar products is going to be gold for you.
That's interesting. That's really interesting, because I sometimes think this is a new product, and what I really need is also just to create awareness mm-hmm. that it exists. So I see what you're saying, though. If someone's looking for, you know, they have the problem and they're more of an intention to buy, it's great. That's a great time to reach them when they're kind of like, how do I solve this problem? I think the challenge with our product, though, in some ways, is it's not just a new product. It's really a new category. And so how do you find ways to reach people and make them aware? So I think influencers are really important. And I'm talking to some companies. I'm definitely going to be talking to Denise's company.
First mover is an advantage and a disadvantage when you are like creating a new category, as you mentioned. And the advantage is that, you know, you get credibility for going first. And in some cases, the category gets named after the brand, right? Like, you know, Tom's Shoes or Kleenex and tissue, right? These sorts of things. And I would say on the influencer piece, my suggestion to you, influencers are a really good option for your business because there's a lot of education and explanation needed, right? Because it's a new category. But I would do a little bit of testing because it sounds like the positioning might be about posture. And that's a totally different market and a totally different buyer and potentially more buyers in some cases, right? And then there's biking and then there's adventure biking, but commuting bike. And then there's just like sweaty guys. I mean, my husband complains about sweat on his dress shirt every time we leave the house, right? You know, you might not be a backpack accessory. You could be, you know, a solution for posture for students. And so engaging with a few influencers with a little bit of money behind different messages and seeing how that returns may help you change or like unlock a full marketing message that then you could put a lot more money and more influencers behind.
Yeah.
I was thinking too, like collaborative marketing. So you're not selling a backpack, you're a backpack accessory, right? So would it behoove you to maybe connect with a JanSport or an LL Bean or somebody who already has a product in place where you can do some sort of collab?
One thing I know is I just need to kind of create more content and get it out there. But, you know, it's a lot to it. So it's great to have people who are experts who can help you. And I'm interested in that. But in terms of the collaborative, so one of the big decisions I had to make early on was, do I want to create an accessory or a backpack with the Ventipack kind of frame concept on it? And it was a big decision. And, you know, different people would have different opinions on that. Ultimately, I decided to go on with what I thought was just more original and different, which was the spacer, kind of the frame itself. But I would say that I am talking to some backpack companies. I am looking at licensing. There's a great company, actually someone I met called Stephen Keys. You might have heard of him. He has a book called One Simple Idea. Great book for anybody that's thinking about creating a product, about how you can come up with a product concept, create a sell sheet, and then go and try to license it. That was another huge decision. Is just, do I make this thing on my own, right? Create a whole company with manufacturing, marketing, and every other function, or should I just try to license the concept? I kind of chose, I guess, the more adventurous, probably the harder, you know, way of doing it. But I also, there's a joy in just kind of creating a product and getting out into the market. So it's not just all about profits. It's about passion and seeing something that you feel the world needs and bringing it out there. We are in conversations right now with a backpack company, very early stages, and I'm looking for great companies to license this product with, you know, whether they have general backpacks or specialty backpacks or even the people who have lawn blowing equipment on our, and they carry that around. You can see on our Instagram account, like they love it. They put on and the person's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It doesn't feel like it's there no more, you know?
What to get your landscaper for Christmas.
Right.
Oh, here's another great one. Someone who actually had problems from 9/11, you know, respiratory problems, worked near the World Trade Center. She uses it to carry an oxygen tank, and it's really made it much easier for her to have that heavy oxygen tank backpack.
So do they come in different sizes?
We have two sizes right now, kind of our standard frame and a smaller Ventipack. So we have two sizes right now. Maybe down the road we'll have three. You can adjust how much separation there is between your back and the backpack using the vertical kind of straps that sort of like a bow that kind of pull the top and the bottom part of the frame together to a certain degree.
How many have you sold?
We've sold several thousand in the U.S. There was a flash sale in Japan 2 years ago where they sold $55,000 worth of them in about 6 weeks, which I thought was really validating. We're launching in Europe on Amazon right now. But, you know, the nice thing is that we're not, again, we haven't really cracked the marketing, but sales by word of mouth are going up so that each year to date, we're up about 50%. We were just featured by the New York Times Wirecutter, which was great. An outdoor retailer chose us as a hot summer pick in 2021. So I think we're growing and people love the product and we've just got to figure out how to get more people aware of it.
Are you selling it from your website or just on Amazon?
Both.
So how do people find you and find your website?
The website is ventipack.com, V-E-N-T-A-P-A-K, not P-A-C-K, but P-A-K.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find us also on Amazon if you just type Ventapack, P-A-K.
Passage to Profit with Kenya Gibson sitting in for Richard Gearhart. I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, our guest Denise Lambertson, and we had two excellent presenters. If you missed anything, you can catch it on our podcast tomorrow. And we will be right back.
There's never been a better time to start your own business. The opportunities are infinite and only limited by your imagination and enthusiasm. At Gearhart Law, we believe the most successful companies all have one thing in common. They start with a solid foundation first. Gearhart Law has years of experience protecting entrepreneurs, ideas, and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at www.gearhartlaw.com. Our professionals will create a custom strategy designed to fit your needs and your budget. All of our attorneys are passionate about protection, licensed and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Visit gearhartlaw.com. Together, we can change the world. Visit gearhartlaw.com. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
It's Passage to Profit.
Alicia Morrissey is our program coordinator here on Passage to Profit, and she's also a fantastic jazz vocalist. You can scroll to the bottom of the PassageToProfitShow.com website and check out her album.
I just want to remind everyone to go and listen to the Passage to Profit podcast that's available on all podcast platforms. So if you missed the show live, you can go back and listen to Passage to Profit at any time.
Absolutely. And now it is time for the group discussion question of the day. So I am going to start with Mark Dingle, who invented Ventapack. So Mark, what is one thing that you use a lot and that you're glad was invented?
I would have to say bicycles. I love biking in country on a mountain bike or in the city to get around, even though some people might think you're insane. I think it's just a great place to get, even in Manhattan, from point A to point B much faster and with more fun and invigoration. So I'd say bicycles.
That's a good one. I like bikes too. Mike Hamm, presenter, host of Greetings from the Garden State podcast. What is the one thing that you use a lot and you're glad was invented?
Microphones. I use microphones pretty much every day, and they have literally changed my life from being very shy and reserved and all that kind of stuff to basically getting on a platform like this and talking into a mic and like finding my voice, so to speak, and my own personality and all that kind of stuff has definitely carried over into real life. So microphone.
Excellent. Absolutely. Denise Lambertson, influencer marketing expert, founder of LMS and managing partner at Constellation Capital. What is one thing that you use a lot and you're glad was invented?
I use music streaming services all the time. So, you know, and I was born in the era of cassettes that then became CDs, that then MP3s. So I love that I can have all of the world's music at my fingertips at any given time to curate and have a soundtrack for my mood.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good one too. Okay, Kenya Gibson, media maven. What is one thing that you use a lot and you're glad was invented?
I have to thank Steve Jobs for the iPhone. Like, where would we be without these phones, right? Like, I know sometimes it could be a little bit of a crutch because I can't stay off of it, but like, it enables us to create, connect, and just do things in real time that we never used to be able to do before. So I'm thankful for the innovation of the iPhone.
Excellent. So I'm trying to channel Steve Harvey here when he does Family Feud by asking everyone the question each time. So mine is going to be a very strange answer that probably very few people would say. So we had a dumbwaiter put in our house. So if you don't know what a dumbwaiter is, it's a little elevator that's not for people, but goes up and down, right? So I literally use that thing every single day, sometimes multiple times a day. And, you know, Richard, my husband, was like, okay, I'm doing it for you, Elizabeth, because you really want it. We'll put the dumbwaiter in the house. And now he's like, oh my gosh, we should have made it go to the second floor. I'm so glad we have this thing. It just, when you have stairs, it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. So we have to wrap up the show, which I'm sorry to do because it's really been fun. So we had Denise Lambertson as our guest, influencer marketing expert, founder of LMS, managing partner at Constellation Capital. And you can find her at www.weareelms.com or constellation.capital, capital with an A, of course, because it's about money. And then we had Mike Hamm, presenter, host of Greetings from the Garden State podcast. And his website is greetingsfromthegardenstate.com. And really fun, all things New Jersey, small but powerful state, right? And then we had Mark Dingle with Ventapack, VentaPack.com. Wow, what a great invention for anybody who has to wear anything on their back and wants to have a little bit of relief. We want to thank the Passage to Profit team, which is Alicia Morrissey, our program coordinator, Noah Fleischman, our amazing producer who always makes us sound so much better, and of course, Kenya Gibson, the media maven. And look for the podcast tomorrow. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, at Passage to Profit Show, Twitter, at Passage to Profit, and we have a YouTube channel. While the information provided during this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without first checking with your legal professional. For all your patent, trademark, and copyright needs, our firm, Gearhart Law, offers free consultations. You can visit us at gearhartlaw.com. Join us next week for another show of Passage to Profit, Road to Entrepreneurship. Thank you all for listening, and thanks to all of our participants. We'll see you next week.